Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 21 of the Film Club podcast. My name is Jason.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Rudy.
Welcome, guys. How's it going?
Good.
How's everybody been?
Fantastic.
Superb.
All right. Well, on this episode, we're going to be reviewing Zero Dark Thirty, finally. And we're going to be counting down our top 10 most anticipated films of 2013. Yeah. So anything before we get started on Zero Dark Thirty? Anything new in your guys' life? No?
Hosted an amateur open mic comedy show at the restaurant.
Oh, how'd they go?
That was pretty cool.
Yeah?
Yeah. You guys should come out and check out the next one. It's every third Tuesday of the month.
And it's a comedy stand up, like open mic night? Or
Yeah.
You just go up and do stand-up?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Black Star Comedy is what it's called.
Black Star Comedy?
Yeah, at Estrella Negra.
Yeah. What's your address?
Oh, it's on Fullerton and Western. Yeah, right next to Quenchers.
Oh, Quenchers, the tater tot pizza. Delicious.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. All right, well, I guess we'll just get right into it.
Okay.
So, Zero Dark Thirty, what did you guys think of Catherine Bigelow's? Yeah.
She was awesome.
She was awesome?
Yeah. I thought she was awesome. I mean, like...
I mean Catherine Bigelow, the director, lady.
Oh. Okay, so the girl, Jessica...
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, she's the same chick from that Brad Pitt movie, Life? Tree of Life?
Tree of Life.
Yeah.
She was the mother.
I would call it the Terrence Malick movie, but that's the film snobbing me.
Yeah. That's important. But, I'm sure it's okay in that. I mean she's really pretty. Definitely.
I agree.
Yeah.
I was struck
years,
by her
man.
Face.
I don't know.
No. I mean, she's definitely like an older woman, and you could definitely tell that, but there's something about her that I find beautiful.
She has this awesome grace to me.
Yeah.
Anyways. But, it was really cool, like, in the movie to see her, pretty much change from persona at times.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she, went incognito. Mm-hmm. Whatever, with the wig or whatever, she just kind of became this more stern person. You know, like I don't know, it was just two different characters. She played multiple characters in that movie, actually, but she definitely held her own. I mean, if she wasn't half as good as she was, the movie wouldn't have worked. You know what I mean? Because like so much rode on her, and she held my attention. I mean, dude, the movie was fucking. We didn't get out of the movie to fucking 1:30. Like, the movie was like 10:40 or some shit.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, I was surprised I stood up for this long. Like,
you were awake in the movie? Hold on, everybody.
Oh, no. Word on the street is he fell asleep once again.
Oh.
Well, I mean, no.
Be honest, Rudy. Be honest. Do not lie to our audience.
Yeah. I nodded my head a few times. But for the most part, she made the movie work for me.
Cool.
And because she was so, like, anxious... get this plan going. It's like, he's there, guys. He's there. And it's like, oh, no, we need more. We need more facts. Like, we can't just go on your hunch.
Yeah.
So like, all that tension was building up. And, he just wanted them to fucking go over there and start fucking bombing whatever to get Osama. But, the payoff was great.
Uh-huh. So, Robert, this was your number 5?
Yes.
Of the year? Mm-hmm. Why did you like it so much?
I'm going to... touch on the point that I said on the last podcast. I loved the way her character just was obsessed with finding Osama bin Laden, and not even just Osama bin Laden, the guy that was apparently his carrier.
Abu Ahmed,
Abu Ahmed, right, or something like that. And how like she just made it her entire life, like every second of her was eating, drinking, everything. She just everything was this.
Yeah,
it was. I need to find this guy. I need, this guy will lead me to Osama bin Laden, and just that dedication, especially even other characters in the movie. Like, I was wondering, the whole time, wow, these characters look so tired. They're so overwhelmed with everything, but they're still doing it. And I just, I love that, how just the obsession that her character had with finding this guy. And I mean, like Rudy said, there were moments where she had different moments. There was times where she was calm and quiet. She stood in the background. Yeah. There were times where she would just explode and, say, you get me what I want. And I just, there was this really amazing moment in the movie where she joins the team in the beginning and she's watching that guy being tortured and interrogated. Mm-hmm. And he looks at her, you know, she's in the room alone with him because the guy doing interrogation walks out.
Yeah.
And the prisoner just looks at her and he says, please help me. And, you know, she looks all like she's all like frazzled because of what she just saw and stuff. Yeah. But she kind of just like her shoulders just like go up and she just kind of looks at him and goes, you can help yourself by telling the truth. Yeah. I was like, wow. Like, you know, you didn't expect that. And all of a sudden you just knew where this character was heading. And that's what I loved about her character.
That's what I liked about how the movie fast forwards through time so much. Mm-hmm. So I like how the relationships are kind of sped up in a way.
Yeah.
Like, especially her transformation where she's still kind of stern from the get go.
Yeah.
But you can see how, you know, she gets more and more hardened, I guess, as the film goes on. But it's kind of like fast forward it because of the way it jumps from year to year. And even there's a relationship in the film where she first gets there and she's kind of butting heads with this other female character. And then, so like one scene, you see them butting heads, and the very next scene, which is years later, like you could tell they've become friends because they've been through all this. And I mean, some people, I guess, would want development, but I kind of like that about the movie that it just did that. And like, as far as Jessica Chastain, I thought she was good, even though I wish there was more to her character, I guess. I mean, I guess that pretty much goes for all the characters in the movie,
but I feel like what it was trying to explain to you is that this character, this is all
her job,
this,
you know,
is what,
that's what
all she's
is.
Doing like she doesn't have a personal life, there's no there's nothing behind there, that this is it, this is her.
I mean, I definitely didn't think that's what Bigelow's going for with it, like just like with Hurt Locker, like she just did it from the perspective of the soldiers. This is like the people who are you know, trying to figure out.
And I love how they both have relating things. I love, like, especially they both had the same type of ending. Not exactly the same, but how, like, afterwards, like, how they're so, like, scared. Like, they just don't feel in their environment anymore because, like, it's over. What they wanted to do is over.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that ending.
That is a great ending,
That was such a great ending. Where, like, she got in that hangar.
Well, I guess we should. Well, I mean, it's not a big deal. We already know how it ends.
Yeah.
But like that last shot, even though I like love the shot of her like in the plane and like you see the little netting behind her, like I didn't get a sense of what her character was going through at that moment. Even like when she starts crying, I thought that was kind of weird moment.
Yeah, well, the pilot even, I think it was more of a like a metaphorical thing, like because the pilot says like, you know, where do you want to go, and it was more than like she, you know, sat back and took it as like, oh, where am I gonna go now, what am I gonna do,
like she had been so invested
and she's finally. I feel like she was
but I didn't really like get that from it. I don't know
I feel like she was sad because, you know, it's over, like she had to say, you know, it's in a way
she lost close people to her, or people that she got close to,
not even know. That I feel like in a way like she was sad that she got this guy, like she maybe liked the thrill of finding him more than finding him. Now that he found him, she's like not happy, like, you know, she said that she had to catch the guy in a way, you know, there's something, I don't know, that's what I took out of it.
Well,
I mean, that was such a great scene because, like, you know, because it was pretty much a long silent moment, and like you're just wondering like what her character's going through, and like so you're trying to think what she's thinking, and you're just sitting there having your own thoughts and opinions about it. It's like, but it is that moment where like you just sit back and start reflecting on, like, especially as everything as extreme for her line of profession, like there's a lot of things that's like, whoa, holy shit, did just happen, you know, just a lot to sit on and contemplate.
Yeah, I mean I understand if you guys liked it, but I was just confused about, the way she was emoting was confusing me. I wasn't sure what the movie was going for with that.
I think her
performance was, anyway.
No, but I think Bigelow did that on purpose, though. Like, she doesn't want you to know why she's like, maybe she doesn't want you specifically to know why she's crying.
Yeah.
You know, maybe like, I took it as her being unhappy that it's done, it's over, that, you know, what is she going to do with her life now?
Yeah.
Rudy took it as her reflecting on everything that happened. Yeah. I think she did that on purpose, you know. It can seem kind of confusing, like, oh, why is she crying? And then you sit back and you realize, oh, well, maybe.
Yeah.
Because from what I took out of the movie is like that. And he took obviously something differently.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's something for the viewer to sit back and reflect.
Yeah.
And like, well, I mean, but even with what you were saying with like how I said, you know, I wanted there to be more to her character. And definitely Bigelow's not going for that.
Yeah.
But then there's something kind of cold about the characters she has in her movie, because there's no. You don't understand what makes them tick, really, besides what they're doing. And that's kind of, I mean, sometimes that could be disappointing as far as characters. And I just, her and nobody else really in, throughout the entire film, you can't really connect to any of them.
Well, I mean, the part I guess I felt most like that human connection, like I was, you know, outside the, you know, this whole, you know, we got a job to do, talk. You know, you did get a few moments where, like, it was just people just, like, chilling and just trying to be happy. Like, I saw that a lot with her and that one girl she became close with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're definitely getting chummy and just, like, whenever they found a moment to, like, relax during all that tension going on.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool. And like...
Yeah, but that was, like, one scene in the whole film. I mean, that's all that was.
It was here and there.
There was nothing to connect to, I don't think, with the characters. I think Jessica's, like, her performance is what helps that character along.
Yeah.
But there still wasn't, for me, there was still nothing to connect to with that.
I don't think there really was. Like, I don't...
And then maybe, you know, the intentions were not to have that, but yeah.
Maybe these people knew each other all this time, but, like, they were so, like, involved in their work that they never really connected in that way. Yeah. They connected differently, you know? Just like the way you connect with someone you work with, it's not something... You're not going to be best friends outside of work, but when you're there, you, like, you know, you have this thing where you talk to each other, you know, you have... You know, you get along. It's sort of the same thing, I think, in that aspect.
Yeah. But I mean, but in a way, like, those scenes that they set up, even though I did like those scenes where you see them getting chummy, like Rudy said, like, looking back at it now, those scenes were there so that when something eventually happens, may or may not happen to one of those characters, you'd have some type of emotional investment in it because you knew that they were friends or whatever. It seems kind of obvious because... Those are two scenes that are pretty close together and precede what happens right afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I get what you're saying. It was like too short or too little.
Yeah.
But for me, it was enough to grab onto.
Those moments are still like crazy. Like every time there was a moment when like some car bombing or something was happening in a movie, like those were pretty, they were like sudden and surprising and they were really effective. And I just really like I like this world. I like procedurals and stuff like that. Like Zodiac's my favorite movie. I don't think this holds a candle to Zodiac or anything, but I mean those are just interesting in themselves. Yeah. I mean I definitely think the movie upon rewatch I'll probably like it more because I am really interested in watching it with subtitles on and just scouring through all the details you know, the investigation or whatnot.
I'd like the title cards between each segment of like that's not a segment of the movie but each.
That was cool.
I did like it. It kind of reminded me of The Shining a bit.
Yeah.
I thought the actual font or typeface was really terrible, though.
It was very bland, and
and it was like the letters were like torn a little bit. I don't know. It just I didn't like the typeface. I thought it looked cheap.
Did the show Alias had that a lot, right?
The typing? I don't think so. Did it?
I don't think so. No, not really.
I don't know why I thought Alias. Well, I mean, a lot of TV shows do that, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, these weren't cool because they were like, it had to do with like some little minor detail of the story. It wasn't just like, I mean, sometimes it would just be like, this is the setting or whatever, but sometimes, you know, it's like whatever group or Tradecraft's the one that everybody points out because like it pops up and then they like say it multiple times in that section. It's like, oh, this is what the fuck that word means. But it was still kind of cool though.
Yeah, it'll definitely pretty cool.
Can the last like 30 minutes of that movie is amazing. I loved it.
Oh yeah.
I loved it.
That was amazing. That's great. That was some great like editing and shooting.
I loved that they shot it, you know, in the completely in night vision.
Yeah.
That was really awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
I loved it.
I heard this on another podcast, but I heard the raid itself took 18 minutes, the real raid, and that's how long it is in a movie.
Oh, is it really?
18 minutes.
Wow.
So I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually thought that this was an actual dramatization of what happened, but this is something that's fictionalized based on those events. I thought these were like based on the actual raid event. But no one really knows the details.
Well, no, I suppose it was based... I mean, the title that came up at the beginning was saying it was based on first-hand accounts. As far as I know, most of it's pretty accurate. Like, some things are dramatized. Like, supposedly the whole group that was coming towards the end of the movie. Like, the neighbors, I guess.
Yeah.
that was overblown a little bit. I mean, people were obviously waking up, you know, thinking what the hell's going on, but they were never really a threat to what was going on and stuff like that.
That was crazy.
But like the bombing, like all that stuff was real. That stuff had actually happened. Yeah.
All the kids huddled.
I need to watch that again. I definitely need to see it in a theater setting because I didn't see it in a theater setting.
Yeah, I actually really want, like, you know, I like refuse to watch it at home. And then when I watch it in the theaters, I'm like, I could have just watched this at home.
Really? It's not a big deal. Okay. Well, I definitely want to see that again.
I mean, I definitely I thought visually it would be much more impressive. And that last 30 minutes was amazing to see. But the rest of it, like, it's something you could watch at home, I think. So.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how you would watch it at home, but you can watch it at home.
No, you can't. Not that I watched it at home. Unless I was a member of the academy or something. What happened?
How do you guys like the Hurt Locker? I
love the Hurt Locker. I know you didn't like it that much, right?
Did you see it during the hype?
I think I did the on-demand thing when it came out on demand before it was all like popular.
Yeah, like, it was just some random movie that had leaked online, obviously, way before it actually came out in theaters. And I watched it. I thought it was okay. And then just got all this hype.
No, I liked it a lot the first time I saw it. And then I bought it on Blu-ray because I remember that. I loved that a lot. And I bought it on Blu-ray. So
I don't know. Maybe I have to see it again. But it is a movie
I just love the tension
that
in the
I liked,
movie.
But I don't know.
Zero Dark Thirty is definitely an upgrade. Like, you know, she's actually an improvement. I mean, so.
Yeah. Well, actually, when you got to when you finally got to meet the Navy SEALs towards the end of the movie, I kind of thought, like, oh, it would have been kind of cool to hang out with these guys more. Like, maybe the movie was about them, but, I mean, it would have been a totally different movie.
Yeah, I think it would.
And it would have been very reminiscent of Hurt Locker, too, so.
So, were there strong characters in the Hurt Locker, or is it just multiple characters?
It's multiple characters. No, it's mostly the three guys, which is Jeremy Renner and the two guys that he works with. Yeah. It's just pretty much them.
And they're good?
Yeah, they're all really good. I thought they were all great performances.
Yeah, I thought. Like, I mean, I think from characters, they're better than the characters that were here.
Yeah, there was more of a connection with them. Yeah, yeah. I agree with that, yeah. But like in Hurt Locker, did the cameos distract you in Zero Dark Thirty? I found for a lot of people, like, tell me.
No, not really. I mean, guess when Gandalfini showed up, I was, like, worried because he showed up in Killing Them Softly, and he kind of ruined that movie. But he was
good.
There's
a lot of quick cameos, but like they wouldn't be like introduced all crazy. You just see a face in the background and be like, hey, it's that guy. That's what I loved about it.
There's a couple guys from Lost in there.
Yeah.
I pointed out to Michael because he's a big Lost fan. Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I know it sounds like I didn't like it as much, and I actually did like it a lot. I just thought her character, there's not much going on than what's kind of on the surface, I guess.
I have to disagree with you on that. I have to tell you that I think that's obviously what was done on purpose, because I think
I definitely agree with you as far as what her intentions were with that.
I don't even think it was intentions. Like, I don't even think there really was anything more. That was her life. I mean, I can argue this point forever, but I mean, that was it. Like, she breathed, ate, slept that job, and.
Oh, whatchamacallit. As long as the movie as it was, like, AW did a good job making you care enough for
that. That movie fucking felt long, though. It felt really long.
I didn't feel the length at all. I was getting so into it. And oh my god.
I mean, but for me, it was going along with the same tension that was going on within the story. You know, I mean, she just wanted. You know, I love that she kept on writing on the glass guy's office.
Oh, the days,
like,
that they.
How many days are passing? Come on, like, come on, move your asses already. Let's get this guy.
Yeah.
So that definitely helped with the build up. I mean, the payoff was great because of, I guess, how long it did feel. Mm-hmm. It made the payoff that much more. Like those 18 minutes. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about the torture. Did you guys have problems with that? No. Or saying that the film is advocating torture?
I have a problem with it.
Waterboarding happened. They did it. I mean, you can't deny it. I mean, so.
Well, I mean, how do you guys feel? Personally, aside from the film, how do you feel about torture?
I think
we're not getting into politics now. Okay,
let's just say it. Why not?
I think of Jessica Chastain, right?
Chastain,
That scene you brought up, you know, where she's trying to give the guy advice, mm-hmm. like how he could, like, stop this torture to It's like, just tell him the truth. You know, you can help yourself by fucking telling him the truth. That she says it right there. Like, that's how I feel about it, you know. So it didn't really bother me because, like, dude, you're only hurting yourself, you know, if you're not, if you don't help us out here.
Yeah, but how do you feel about torture?
No, he's asking him what you feel about torture.
How do you feel about torture in general?
In general, I mean, well, obviously, it's bad when it's taken, like, to the extremes. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm not too far-fetched from, you know, it's like, well, it's got to be done. It's got to be done, you know, for the greater good. You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can always take things too far. And, you know, obviously, you got to draw the line at some point. It's like, well, you know, how inhumane do I want to be?
Yeah.
Do you want to, do you want to wrap a dog collar around somebody and walk him like a dog? you crapped your pants, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about it, Rob?
I plead the fifth. I just personally hate talking about politics. So any aspect of it. But, I don't know. I mean, I didn't have a problem with the movie.
If you don't want to talk about it.
The question was...
It's a political issue.
It's a political issue. I think it's more of like an ethical or moral question.
Okay, there's a type of torture that, you know, obviously draws a line, you know.
Yeah.
I think I like to, you know, like, I saw this, them doing this in another... I saw this in Homeland, too. And they were doing it in the movie too, where they played like the heavy metal music, stop it, and then play it again, and then stop it, and then play it again.
Yeah.
And then, like, aspects of that torture is like, I think more where you disorient the person better than the physically doing something to the person.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's all I can say, really.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Rudy, I guess. Like, whatever needs to be done for the greater good.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's wrong.
No, yeah, I mean, you can't really know until you're you really don't know what's on the line or what's at stake. So it's one of those topics that's really touchy. So I don't know. I think the politicians have more problems. What?
You don't want to ruffle any feathers?
No, I just don't know. It's just, it's weird because, like, I don't know. Like, honestly, like, I would be indifferent to it. The honest truth, like, it would be like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, when, like, so. Yeah, I mean, for the greater good, you know, sometimes you'd have to get there, you know, but I don't know. Like, I feel like the politicians had more of a problem with it than normal, like, just regular people.
Well,
like,
yeah.
They're the ones bringing it up and saying, oh, no, that's
not. Oh, yeah, they're just straight up denying it.
Yeah, but that's not even, yeah, who cares if it happened? It's the past, like, you know. Like, so
people want to, I don't know,
so
be on their high horse, I guess.
So, anything else to say about Zero Dark Thirty? Do you guys know what Zero Dark Thirty means?
What was that in reference to?
I don't know. Do you know?
It means at past midnight or after midnight in military terms.
Okay.
So
is that what time they did the thing? No, right?
Not necessarily. No, I mean just the whole concept of like, okay, now it's about to get dark, guys. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Half past the dark. Okay, I see. Kind of like a term. Midnight.
Yeah.
Like, is it things are about to go down.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
But again, I also think, you know, it's the exact time for after midnight. Like, that's a term for it as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Something like that. But I thought
it was O-30 or something. I thought that was the military time. I don't know.
Yeah, what was interesting is Catherine Bigelow and some other guy were already in pre-production to a similar idea before they came up with what they got now. But, like, as soon as they finished their script, like, the news broke out that they killed Osama. So, like, okay, well, now we gotta go back and rewrite everything.
Yeah.
And then, I thought that was cool, though.
Yeah, it was pretty, it was, like, literally, like, only a year and a half later? 2 years, almost?
What do you mean?
That the movie came out after they got him?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is quick. It was really quick turnaround as far as the movie, the rest of the film.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, she's to do a movie like this, you'd think it would be like exploitative, but she does it in a way where it just doesn't feel that way at all.
Yeah,
like she's just trying to exploit what happens. She's just trying to tell a story.
Yeah, I hated. Okay, it's a little off the movie, but regardless of the movie, I hated that speech that girl won for the best actress. What's her name again?
Jessica Chastain.
Yeah, that speech was terrible. And then she was praising Kathryn Bigelow for a pioneer of women for women. I get it, guys.
I think I fast-forwarded.
A female director who won an award. We get it. She's a woman in a man's world or something, which is not true because there's a lot of women, female directors out there.
Yeah.
But she just does it good. I mean, that's the only difference.
Yeah. All right.
She's also directed pretty crappy movies, too.
I've only seen three of her
things. She directed like a vampire movie in the 80s.
Near Dark?
Yeah,
Near Dark is awesome.
Well, no, Near Dark was terrible.
I love Near Dark.
What a terrible...
That's the only movie I've watched. This movie's awesome.
No.
It's like one of the best vampire movies ever.
And shit, that was so stupid.
I love Zero Dark. I love Near Dark. Okay. I said Zero Dark.
That should probably be on my bucket list.
And then she did Blue Steel, too, with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I've seen is Near Dark and then her, too.
Near Darkness.
I love Near Dark.
Hey, okay, let's. Are we gonna rate this, or are we gonna keep?
So in summary,
yeah,
everybody,
let's do it.
All right. I guess, I wish there was more to the characters, but I definitely agree with Robert where that was, that was the intentions.
Yeah.
And I don't know the material itself. I was really fascinated by, and those last 30 minutes like just sealed it for me. I guess.
Yeah.
So 4 out of 5 for me. Yep.
4 out of 5 for me as well. I loved just even the side characters and the Navy SEALs guys, how dedicated they were, how this is all they did. And it was great. And those last 30 minutes were amazing. 4 out of 5.
At 4 out of 5 for me too. The movie was long, but the payoff was great, and the character was intriguing enough for me to like stay invested as long
and
as
not fall asleep.
To be. Yeah, I fell asleep the minimal amount.
What's the longest you fell asleep for? It?
I have no idea. But yeah, definitely 4 out of 5. The payoff was great.
Cool. Awesome, we all agreed on something.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, I was fully expecting to come in here and Rudy to start bashing it. That's what I expected.
No, I liked it.
I was tired after we left.
This is not a movie to watch at 1 in the morning.
Alrighty, moving on. We're going to be counting down our top 10 most anticipated films of 2013. Who wants to start?
Are we going to do the same thing as I did with the list?
Well, yeah, whoever starts, and then we'll just do it.
From the bottom 10?
Yeah.
Yep.
Who wants to start?
Go ahead, Jay.
You start.
Alright, my number 10 is Old Boy. Old Boy is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I am a big... I don't approve of remakes for the most part, and I definitely wasn't happy about this.
Hands around it, I don't care.
But Spike Lee himself is why.
That has me worried. But.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bash it.
Yeah, but we're talking about Spike Lee outside of his filmmaking. Come on now.
Okay, 25th Hour is the only good film he's ever made, but that's like out of like 100 movies.
I've only seen like 3 of his movies, and the 3 I like. So
Crooklyn.
I've seen Crooklyn, I've seen He Got Game, and I've seen 25th Hour. I thought they're all great movies. But I don't know. Just
game?
Yeah.
I need to see that.
Just the fact that he's attached makes me excited. I mean, not too excited, but Josh Brolin kind of does. And I know it's not going to like tread the same territory that the original did anyway. Like they're going to go with a different. They're probably going to keep like the same premise of guy being held captive for so long and then being released and having to find out. But supposedly, and people usually say this when they're remaking stuff like. We're doing our own story. It's not going to be the same thing. And that remains to be seen. But I'm still cautiously optimistic about it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Number 10.
Okay. My number 10 is Star Trek Into Darkness.
Cool.
Comes out May 17th, just so you all know. I wrote the dates down.
Oh, shit. I didn't write any of my dates.
I came more prepared than that. I was kidding.
Yeah, I think so.
I had a lot of fun watching the first one. It's not, it's this plot wise and stuff. It's your typical, movie, Star Wars thing.
Are you a Star Trek fan? Are you Trekkie?
No, Star Trek. I said Star Wars. Obviously I'm not, cause I just called it Star Wars. I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. No. And as for someone who's not a Star Trek fan, it's a good movie to watch, to get into, if you've never known. I had a lot of fun watching. It's a blast. And I'm hoping that I'll have the same amount of fun watching Star Trek too.
Yeah.
So I just hope there's less flares. Okay.
What do you think about the?
I enjoy his flares.
The similarities between because it's a whose movie is it again? Directing it?
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams. I guess somebody was comparing, well, because I know his posters a lot, somebody was comparing the, what?
Mic.
Move the mic closer, yeah. Oh,
sorry.
Is it better?
Yeah, it's better.
All right, the Into Darkness poster is just some silhouette of, what, Kirk?
Yeah.
The destruction of everything?
Yeah.
But, like, how it looks similar to, what Inception poster or?
Well, a lot of posters are looking like that. Or, yeah. So it does, you can't. There's a lot of posters coming out.
There's a poster. I don't give a shit.
Well, I don't care.
Posters. I know it's these things. But, yeah. I'm definitely not a Star Trek fan either. But I thought the last film was good enough, and it has me like interested for more, especially from J.J. Abrams. You know.
A note about the solar flares. I don't hate them. It's just he overuses them sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I mean,
I don't think J.J. Abrams is anything special, to be honest.
I mean, there's certain times where it makes the scene look really nice and beautiful. Like, I agree. Yeah. But then there's just times where it's there for no reason. And it's like covering a line's covering up a guy's face, and you're like, why is there a solar flare right now?
That's pretty funny.
All right. My number 10, it's between two movies that are about the same thing. That's why they're both number 10. Is The End.
Uh-huh.
And The World's End. This is the end. It's about a group of guys. I think it's James Franco.
They actually play themselves in the movie.
Yeah.
They all play themselves.
Hey, you know what I'm talking about, Jay?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really read about it.
So, just a group of guys hold up in like a cabin or something during the end of the world. And it's like, it's pretty much their, I guess, how they react to the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, but it's supposed to be like a more comical. Yeah, it's supposed to be comedy. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then The World's End is actually Simon Pegg. It's pretty much the same version, just, you know, Simon Pegg style. And, you know, we all love him for Shaun of the Dead. And I haven't seen Hot Fuzz yet.
I don't give a shit about Hot Fuzz.
You didn't like Hot Fuzz?
I thought it was all right. I would never watch it again.
I loved it.
All right. No. I'm like hoping it's good. And I you know, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next film since Scott Pilgrim.
Wait, Simon Pegg did Scott Pilgrim?
No.
Are we talking about Edgar Wright? Edgar Wright
directed.
Did Edgar Wright direct this World's End movie, though?
Well, yeah.
He's directing it? Okay. Yeah. Hey, that's what
I'll get more into that
because
I will discuss about this movie. So we'll discuss more about that.
All right. My number nine, I'm not going to say too much about it. It snuck into my list. It's Oblivion.
I am so excited for that soundtrack more than I am for the movie.
Nah, I don't know. Like we
M83.
we watched, you know, the day we watched Zero Dark Thirty, there was a trailer for it, and like I just really thought it looked really cool.
It looks
and,
nice,
like,
is it?
The visuals were amazing.
I agree. Yeah,
and you know, I do like Tom Cruise. He's not the greatest, but I do enjoy him.
If he's in the right role, he really makes it really good. I don't know why people really shit on him a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to be really good. I don't know.
I agree.
I don't know why, but it just looks really cool. Yeah.
So that's number nine.
Cool.
Exactly.
My turn now?
Yeah.
My number nine actually just got a release date a couple days ago, and I'm really excited. I think you know what I'm talking about, right? No? Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't.
It's Gravity by Alfonso Cuarón. It's a sci-fi movie coming out.
Okay.
Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are in it. It's a movie. It's a one-take movie. That he did.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm excited because that one take scene in Children of Men was so amazing.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Or at least I think I maybe
didn't
wrong.
They have like a couple of them in that movie? Well, yeah. they just had really long takes in Children of Men.
But the one like, where the battle towards the end, that one's like was like 10 minutes long, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, or at least I think it is a one-shot movie. Like, I'm not positive, but I swear I was reading about it.
I had read that somewhere,
But it's set in like, she's she's in space or something, and like with George Clooney and their ship, like something happens and they get stranded in space and they're trying to find their way home or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I don't know the exact plot, but.
Well, that's the first time hearing about it, and I.
Yeah, it was made like.
Do your
2 years.
Research, Rudy.
Huh?
Do your research.
Yeah, it was made like a year and a half ago. Wasn't it supposed to come out like last year? It's already been made and finished and edited. Yeah. It's waiting for a release date.
Yeah. It was a movie. It didn't quite make my list, but just the fact like approaching a list for me, a big part of it is like the director.
That's just how I am. You love Children of Men, didn't you?
I did. Rudy was more of a Children of Men fan than I was. I mean, no, I thought it was amazing. But I mean, I don't know. I do really like the director, but then I was thinking back on I haven't seen much of his filmography. I've seen the Harry Potter movie he did. And I see Children of Man. I never saw Y Tu Mama También or whatever.
Oh, that's a great movie. You should definitely
see it. Yeah. So, I mean, I was just thinking about it and thinking, do I really like this director as much as I'm thinking I do? And I didn't have much to go by, so that's why I didn't put it on the list. But, yeah. Cool. And Sandra Bullock, you know. I'm worried about her.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not to shoot down your take. It's a good pick.
My number 9 is Carrie. Looking forward to that. I mean, it looks like obviously it's gonna be a much more blown up version of the original, but I'm interested in the new take on Carrie. You know, it's like, how long has it been ago since the original came out?
I'm not sure. Was 80s or late 70s?
70s, late 70s or early 70s, because or somewhere around there.
Yeah, didn't Sissy Spacek get a award for that role?
I don't remember.
Or at least start off a career. But anyways, I'm just interested in the new take.
Cool.
Number 9, Carrie. Who's directing it? Does anyone know?
No.
I don't know off the top of my head, no.
You want me to IMDb it right now?
I've seen the teaser for it, and it looks pretty cool that she pretty much wreaks havoc on to the city, I guess.
Yeah.
Kimberly Pierce. She directed Boys Don't Cry.
Oh.
Wow, and Stop Loss.
I never saw Stop Loss.
Neither did I, so I don't know what it sounded like. I was excited about that. I saw Boys Don't Cry.
It's like a war movie, right?
Something like that. Somebody goes AWOL from the war or something when he hangs out with his group of friends. I don't remember.
I have something against Chloe Grace Moretz. There's something about her I don't like. The girl who's playing Carrie. What? She was in Kick-Ass. She played Hit Girl.
She's tall.
Oh, that's her?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There's something about her I don't like. Yeah.
I met her at a screening for Kick-Ass at River East.
Yeah.
She grew up fast because she's tall now. Like,
yeah. God. She's pretty big.
Awesome. Big girls don't cry. Or the big boys don't cry. Anyways.
My number 8 is The Fast and the Furious Part 6.
Wait, where's my Price is Right thing? I'm just kidding.
I'm not sure if you guys ever saw Fast 5, but
it was okay.
It was. I thought it was really enjoyable. Nice little heist flick a la Ocean's 11.
I
really enjoyed the cast, and I thought The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is a good addition to that.
I agree that it's going in the right direction as far as turning him into heist movies now.
Yeah.
And
Well, to be honest, like, I've always enjoyed the Fast and the Furious movies.
All of them?
I mean, no. To be honest, everybody who seemed to love the first one, I didn't like the first one that much, but I really enjoyed the second one
Colors?
I really enjoyed Tyrese in the second one, like their character thing. And I actually enjoyed Tokyo Drift as well, even though it was ridiculous. And then part 4 I never saw because it was just like the characters from the first one, which I didn't like. But I really enjoyed Fast 5, and when I look at the movie, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of excited to see that.
Oh, yeah, they did make part 4. I totally thought that 5 was like right after Tokyo Drift. You forget about the one right before that.
And at the end of part, I guess Michelle Rodriguez died in part 4.
But
at the end of part 5, they hint that she's still alive.
She's a secret agent. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay, my number 8 is from the guy who did Primer, the time travel movie came out. He's coming up with a new one. It's called Upstream Color. I'm really excited for it because I really loved Primer. Did you like Primer?
I still have seen Primer.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Primer?
Pokemon? No. It's nobody famous is in it. Like, it's these guys who create a time machine. And it's really...
I heard a super intelligent movie.
Yes, and it's really kind of abstract, too, at times. And But following it, you get really... I loved it. I was really into the movie. And I don't know. The plot for this movie is, like... I saw the trailer. The trailer is just a bunch of, like, random images from the film and just, like, quiet whispering and talking and stuff. But the plot of the movie is a man and a woman are drawn together, entangled in the life cycle of an ageless organism. Identity becomes an illusion as they struggle to assemble the loose fragments of wrecked lives. I mean, I'm sorry, but this guy, I don't, I'm sold. I'm going to watch it. I know it sounds pretentious and stuff, but I'm totally going to watch it.
And now I'm going to watch it.
Jason, like, nah.
Oh, no, yeah, sure, cool. Sure.
You're like, whatever, man.
No, sure. Yeah, I just don't have primer to go off of, so yeah, that's gotta add to my bucket list.
My number 8, 300 Rise of an Empire. I really enjoyed 300. I was actually surprised, like, wow, that they actually made a second one. Did you guys hear about this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard it's in post-production already.
Damn. So, yeah. I was sold right away. It didn't take long for me. So, number 8, 300.
Cool.
Rise of an Empire.
My number 7 is The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. I'm just, you know, excited to see the journey and the story continue. Mm-hmm. I know Benedict Cumberbatch is doing the voice for Smaug, and I'm interested to see the dragon. I really like him. And he's about to explode, you know. He's in Star Trek. He's in... Yeah.
He's a great actor. I saw him in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that last year.
Yeah. I watched it like at 3 in the morning on HBO once.
I heard it's really slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like him. I don't know. I'm just excited about the story. I like the first one more than I thought I would, and I'm excited to see some more 48 frames per second.
Me
for
too.
Sure.
I kind of should have added that to my list because we had a lot of fun watching. It was fun watching the last
one. I enjoyed
one.
It, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't add it. My number 7 is one that Rudy mentioned earlier, The World's End. It is the ending to the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, which is what Shaun of the Dead is. It's a trilogy, and then Hot Fuzz, and this is going to be the last one. So I'm excited. For all of you, some educational Three Flavors Cornetto. I don't know if you're familiar with the term.
I'm not.
That's what the trilogy is called. In each movie, one of the characters eats a Cornetto ice cream cone. In the first one, it was Sean. It was a red one, and that was to signify the violence and the blood in the movie.
Yeah.
Then in the second one, it was what's his name, Nick Frost. He was eating a blue one, and that was to signify just the symbolism of the police. And this one, I don't know what color they're going to use, but somebody's going to eat a Cornetto ice cream cone in this one, and I can't wait. Yeah, that's why it's called the Three Flavors Cornetto Trilogy. Educational info.
That's funny.
That was 7, right?
Yeah.
7 is Kick-Ass 2. Same thing with 300, like Kick-Ass, like, oh, cool. I enjoyed the first one. To make a second one, sweet. I'm so... Did you guys like Kick-Ass?
Oh, yeah. I had fun watching it. It was great.
I don't know. I thought it was enjoyable, but it didn't
go. Jason, you're just a negative Nancy.
I don't know. It could have been a lot cooler than it was. That's for sure.
Well, I'm excited. Jim Carrey's in it.
Plays
the general,
that's
right?
That's one of the reasons I'm pretty excited about it.
Awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Something else to look forward to. Kick-Ass 2. All right. Jay?
My number 6 is The Lords of Salem. I like original Rob Zombie.
I do too.
I'm just happy he's gotten away from the Halloween remakes and he's back to making original horror. Yeah. And this movie, he's obviously is doing away with his white trash motif that he likes to do. But I mean, he's doing something. I don't know. I guess it's inspired by like Italian kind of gothic horror cinema. Yeah. It seems like, and I'm just saying that because I know, but not based on any Italian gothic horror.
Did you see the trailer?
I did see the trailer. I thought the trailer was awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
But I don't know. I'm just excited. It could be terrible or it could be really good. But I was a big Thousand Corpses fan. I actually liked that a lot more than the Devil's Rejects.
I love Devil's Rejects more. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
like the most people liked it. But I don't know. I like how much more silly and fun.
Yeah.
And where Devil's Rejects kind of made you feel like shit.
Yeah, it did. No, I agree.
So that's
it was
why
like a road trip movie for serial killers or something.
It's like, you know, it's like the Texas Chainsaw or something. It's just, you don't feel good watching it. But for me, I had a good time watching Thousand Corpses. So
cool.
But yeah, I'm just happy to see him getting
me
back.
Me too. I
think he's got a good voice as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. It's good to see him getting back. It is really good to see
that. That sounds cool.
And of course, you know, his fucking wife, Sherry Moon Zombie's got to be in it too. But she's not that bad. She could be worse.
I saw in her trailer, she's not aging well. I'm just going to say that. All right. Number 6 for me is Stoker.
Cool. Oh yeah,
for Park Chan Wook, the director of Old Boys, directing his first American movie, right?
Yeah,
his debut.
And
yeah.
Just the trailer is amazing. It's just what I'm excited is you have no idea what direction this movie is going to go.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm so excited about. So
yeah, good job, Robert.
That's definitely I'm definitely excited for that one. That one's March 1st for anybody who's interested to know.
Yeah, it's coming out. It's definitely gonna be an old boy kind of year. We got two old boys coming. Well, you know, old boy, and then you got old boy by the same director. Anyways,
six,
right?
Yeah.
The Evil Dead. Yeah, The Evil Dead. I seen the original when I was younger. I didn't appreciate it. I don't know why I didn't appreciate it, but I always wanted to get back into it. I haven't revisited it since, but I'm eager to. And, you know, I know, because, you know, it has a lot of respect in the horror community. So I feel like I should definitely check it out before check out the remake.
Yeah.
The remake should be interesting.
Yeah, it looks like they're going for, you know, that hard R.
That our Red Band trailer is amazing. Did you see it?
I haven't.
Oh my god, it's so good. Have you seen it? You guys need to Google it.
No, I just want to see the movie.
Yeah, yeah. At this point. I'm excited enough already.
Oh my god,
that's
yeah.
That's number six.
I think it's in good hands. Raimi's was producing, overwatching everything. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's... For a remake, as long as somebody who was there for the original is making sure everything's being done right, I'm not scared. It's going to be good.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be a horror movie too, sort of. Horror movie, psychological thriller. You don't even know where it's going to go. Yeah. Exciting.
My number five is Elysium. Neil Blomkamp finally returning since District 9, which came out in 2009.
Shit. Love District 9?
I mean, I had seen District 9. I did like it. I thought it was, you know, I wasn't crazy about it, but then I saw it again, and I'm like, this is a really fantastic movie. I just like how... He makes really awesome and entertaining action movies. I mean, an action movie. Like, I love what he did, like, with the weapons. It was so inventive.
Yeah.
But then there's also, you know, this other aspect where it's, like, social commentary. And this seems to be more like that. The premise is it's, like, set, like, 130 years in the future. And, like, the rich and the wealthy people kind of have abandoned Earth. And they live in, like, a space station in the air. And then it features, like... Matt Damon looking badass, like with his head shaved.
Well, he's like diagnosed with a disease or something, and he needs to get to Elysium. What is it called?
I'm not sure.
Elysium to get cured or something, because that's where they have the treatment.
Right? Yeah. So I guess like the worlds are going to collide.
I'm excited for that one for sure.
The poor people on Earth, on the damaged Earth, and people in the air who have all the money. So I'm just excited about that.
August 9th, 2013.
Cool. You're up, Rob.
Okay, my number five is, Jason knows from working with me at AMC Days how much of a Superman geek I am. I literally took like four posters home, and I was so excited for it. And
Superman Returns, you mean?
Yeah, for Superman from Returns, the Superman movies. What did I say?
No.
No,
you just said Superman movie. Making sure that's what it was.
Yeah, remember I made you get the cardboard cutout out of the merchandising room, the marketing room, and I posted it on my wall. I'm excited for Man of Steel. I mean, hopefully Zack Snyder. I mean, Zack Snyder is a good director when he didn't write the movie or anything. Course, I'm referring to Sucker Punch.
He had the M. Night Shyamalan syndrome.
I don't know. I'm excited. I mean, Nolan produced it. I mean, helped. I don't know. So we'll see where it goes. At first, that was like the costume. I was a little, you know, there's nothing wrong with keeping the costume like old school, but I guess. They got to make it all cool and dark. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, I'm excited. So.
Yeah. Awesome. My number five is Pacific Rim. Guillermo del Toro finally directing something instead of presenting or producing or whatever. This is his first directorial movie in a while, and it should be great. You know, giant robots, giant monsters.
Great trailer. It's a fun trailer.
What's not to like?
Yeah.
Number five.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's going to come up later.
Yeah, I think it's at his list. So, Jason, what's your number four?
My number four is Only God Forgives. You know, Nicholas Winding Refn and Ryan Gosling reunited. So that should be cool. I did finally see the little 30-second teaser, and it wasn't what I was expecting. Like, you know, after having seen Drive.
It's a crappy teaser.
Drive was so, like, stylized, and it seems like, this seems like a foreign film that was made in Thailand, which obviously it was.
Yeah.
It just seemed kind of weird, but I'm excited about it.
It's being released as a Denmark film because it has a release in Denmark already. It's supposed to be like in March or something, but there's no release date for the U.S. Yeah.
I am most excited about it. I'm sure you guys, or I'm sure Robert's probably going to bring it up later, but
maybe. It's,
or probably Rudy too, because he's a big Drive fan.
Are you writing your list as you go?
I'm dipping at the last minute.
Oh, I thought you were.
But yeah, great fucking poster. I love that poster.
Yeah, that poster is great.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's a cool, simple little premise that I think, you know, catches the eye right away. It's about a Bangkok police lieutenant and a gangster settling their differences in a Thai boxing match. Like, that's enough.
Yeah, that sounds pretty badass. Yeah, that's
cool. He's on a fucking rise.
Not really with that gangster squad, supposedly.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to stop doing that.
What?
Anna Kendrick?
Yeah, Anna Kendrick.
What about her?
Did you read about her comment?
What did she say?
Oh, she tweeted something after watching Gangster Squad. It's like damn, Ryan Gosling. It's like, I can't go to your movies anymore because apparently public masturbation is illegal.
Wow.
Like, damn. It should be good.
What a whore.
What? No, she's great.
What a whore. No,
she's great. Yeah, I mean, if you have a hot dog named after you at Hot Dogs, you're awesome.
All right, number four, right?
Yeah. No, wait. Whose turn?
I just did my number four. Yeah.
Okay, my number four is Elysium or whatever.
Cool.
We already talked about it, so that's my number four. Go ahead. Awesome. Ready?
Number four, The Great Gatsby.
Got delayed. Yeah.
Did it? To what?
It was supposed to come out this summer? Month. This month.
Oh no, it got delayed to summer though, right?
Yeah.
Based on a classic novel, Fitzgerald, right?
Yep, I think so. I don't know. I said yep.
Sure. I don't read, so.
But, yeah, so you got Leo.
Let me Google.
You got fucking Leo fucking helming the cast, so, yeah.
So we shall see. You know?
Leo's, yeah, he's starting to get good again. Like, was a slump for a while, but he's starting to pick good roles again, so.
And Carey Mulligan's in it, too.
I don't know what's up with her. Wait,
is it Carey Mulligan?
Yeah.
Am I mistaken?
It is Carey Mulligan.
I really enjoy Carey Mulligan, but like, you know, we talked about Never Let Me Go, how much you love, like, you love that movie, right?
Yeah, I did.
I've seen it like 3 times, and like, the more I watch her, I like see how she acts, and then I like start to dislike her style even more and more. Like, she always has like this look, like she's about to cry. And like, that's her look.
I don't see the care. Like, a lot of people put her on the screen because she seems to be so charismatic or something. But I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I like her. She's always a weaker.
Oh no, I definitely like her, but I don't know.
No, and another thing I like about The Great Gatsby is like, I guess it's set in the Golden Age or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I guess I don't appreciate that, or at least I haven't seen a lot of movies or appreciate enough movies from that era. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like Baz Luhrmann, he's an imaginative guy.
Oh, Baz Luhrmann directing it?
Yeah, he did Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And I never saw Australia.
No, but I heard that was bad.
I don't know. This is great. But it's great. Number three.
My number three is Stoker. How is it not going to be on this list?
Yeah, it's I was about to say, wait a minute, I'm not hearing this yet.
No, but yeah, you know, Chan Wook Park is one of my favorite working directors. I mean, not so much lately, like, I don't think he ever reached the greatness of what he did in Old Boy for me, but still he has a full body of work that I really like, you know, like I really enjoyed Thirst. He did the Lady Vengeance and Mr. Vengeance.
Old Boy is just enough for me, you know.
Well, no, I mean, outside of that, like I really enjoyed the entire Vengeance trilogy. Yeah. And then one of his first movies was JSA, a Joint Security Area.
Yeah,
and it's like really, it's a bit melodramatic, but that's kind of like what I like about Korean films that I've seen, that they go for that melodrama and it kind of works. Like I Saw the Devil.
Yeah.
Did he do I Saw the Devil?
No. I'm just saying, as far as the melodrama goes, they're really good at that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I'm just excited about it. And, you know, it seems to have this really twisted relationship at the center of it. With Mia Wasikowska, who I really love. Like, she's one of my favorite actresses.
Oh, yeah?
I really like her. And then Matthew Good, you know, playing this uncle who's probably a fucking serial killer or something like that. Something of that sort.
Yeah, you don't know what's happening.
You don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, but that's what I'm so excited
about. It looks like it's going to have a nice...
Yeah.
It's going to be twisted like he normally is, so I'm excited. All
right.
And it looks a lot better than Kim Ji Won's American debut in The Last Stand, which I'm sure we'll be talking about next week.
Like, oh, yeah.
Total polar up. That's the guy who did I Saw the Devil.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I am hearing like the action is pretty good in it. But, okay. Yeah. Cool. We'll find out next week, I guess.
We'll find out next week, yes.
Right, yeah. Number three,
The Place Beyond the Pines. Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper, and the guy who directed Blue Valentine directed this movie.
Yeah. Which you would like, right?
Yeah, I've still not seen it. I'm really hesitant because I don't want to sit and cry.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's on my queue. Don't worry. Yeah. But
it's going to be a rough week for you.
That trailer, yeah. For real, right? I know, I'm saying that's
pretty heartbreaking.
Maybe in a moment in my life where I'm happier. yeah, the trailer just alone was amazing. And I mean, I think I have an idea where this movie is going to go. Yeah. I read a partial review on it, like somebody's kind of, so I have a feeling the movie, I don't know, the direction where it's going to go. And I'm really excited to see it, like,
yeah,
go that direction. Yeah. That's all I have to say. And plus the ending line to that trailer, if you ride like thunder, you're gonna crash like thunder. That's a great line. That's such an awesome line. So yeah. All right.
Number three. How could it not? This is definitely gonna be on my list. Jurassic Park 3D. You know that, right?
Are you kidding me? No. It's fucking post 3D work for a movie that's like 20 years old.
I don't care. I fucking love the movie.
That doesn't count. It's not even a new movie.
You know what's
movie.
Funny though? Whenever I think about like, oh, you know, I always know that the movie was released in 1993.
Yeah.
So whenever I think about the back in, like when I was young, I always work around that year and that movie. Oh, yeah. Well, that movie. Oh, yeah, came, so it's funny. So obviously it sticks with you, you know. Yeah. So.
No, because the first time I saw that movie, like I say this over and over again, because I shit you not, I feel like shitting bricks.
I can picture you.
And those graphics still hold up today, and it'll be all the more exciting.
No, I don't know if they still hold up today, though. I've seen it on TV.
I'm the graphics dude, but the movie itself doesn't.
I was so excited.
Yeah, I mean, and it really is a shame because, you know, some of Rudy's best movies that he loves of all time are heavily flawed films, unfortunately.
I love how you're looking away when you're saying that.
They are heavily flawed, but...
That's so awesome.
That's Park 3D. Number three.
That's cool.
Number two, Jason.
My number two is Pacific Rim. You know, Del Toro, he's back finally. I like that he's, you know, and a big movie like this, or a movie that's trying to be huge, you know, Monsters vs. Robots. And I like that he didn't like overcast it, you know, felt like he needed some big star to carry the film. You know, we got Idris Elba, yeah, who, you know, who is coming up, but he's not like a money maker. And then I believe Charles Dunham, the guy from Sons of Anarchy. So yeah. I think it's kind of cool that he's not going for the big face to sell the movie. And the movie's probably just going to be an awesome time.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
I'm excited too for that one.
Yeah. Not much else to say.
Okay. Yeah. My number two is Anchorman 2. I am so excited. You do not believe how much I love Anchorman 1. I will fight anyone who disagrees with me that it's the best comedy ever made.
I haven't seen it.
What? Yeah. Okay, here's the thing about Anchorman. You watch it the first time, yeah, it's funny. You think it's good, but it's not hilarious. But the more you watch it, the more
it's really good.
The more it gets funnier and hilarious, and you catch the really like really bizarre jokes. And yeah. I freaking love Anchorman. I'm so excited, and I should lower my expectations because I'm way too excited for this. So like, because I don't want to get disappointed. So yeah. I mean, but yeah, that's my number two.
So like, that's your funniest movie of all time?
For me, yeah.
What do you know? Yours off the top of your head, Rudy? I was thinking about this the other day.
Were you?
Mine is Borat.
Borat? That's a good one too, yeah.
Like, that's a movie I could just watch over and over again, yeah, and I think it's the funniest thing ever. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's my number two.
No, Anchorman's awesome.
Yeah,
I love
it is.
Anchorman.
It's great.
No, I definitely need to check that out. And then I need to think about that. We should bring that up for a podcast later.
Mm-hmm. Funniest movies of all time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this would be small.
Yeah. Number two, Ty. Stoker and Old Boy, you know, they both had the deal with Chan Wook Park, so I'm excited for both.
Cool. I don't know, man. Spike Lee, I hate him.
I mean, yeah, I am worried about the whole Spike Lee thing, but then again,
his arrogance just can ruin something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, for me, he still has a strong voice as a filmmaker, you know.
Well, you know, he's dealing with old boy, and you know that's a great movie already. So hopefully he continues the greatness.
Yeah.
Let's see. And Stoker, you know, this is Chan Wook's personal endeavor, and you know, first American.
Hopefully it works. I mean, to be honest, I wish those filmmakers would just stay in their country and
come on, don't branch out.
Stay in your country.
Why branch out? You're making great movies. Don't come to America and make some dumb movie. Well, I mean, when have you
seen a director come from another country make a good movie here? I don't.
Usually, like actors do, and it never happens. You know, fucking Jackie Chan came and Jet Li.
No, I'm talking about happened to them?
Why? I'm saying I don't know much directors who have come and tried to make it a go here.
Angry.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, didn't he get famous from like he wasn't famous like for his?
No, it wasn't. Some movie, a Chinese film, I think. Right? It was.
Well, he did it like when his name started coming out there. I need to see it again. I saw it when I was like little and didn't appreciate it. But the Ice Storm.
Oh,
when that
okay,
came yeah. out, that's when he was starting to get big, and then he did Crouching Tiger soon after that. Yeah. Well, I guess Crouching Tiger was a Chinese film, so. Yeah. But still, like he was already working, doing like English language films, you know, before that had happened. I could be completely wrong about this.
No, he did. He got really famous for Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, and then he did Sense and Sensibility, and I think that was his first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
But Stoker, old boy, number two.
Cool. Good choices.
Cool. My number one is The Place Beyond the Pines. I wanted to avoid your trailer, but then when I saw it, I'm like,
"Isn't that such an awesome?"
This is a movie made for me right there. I mean, you know, it definitely is hitting like typical kind of by the number tropes, but I just know there's going to be such a strong emotional element to the movie, and you could just kind of just tell, you know.
I just love when the quotes in the trailer said, you know, a story about fathers and sons and the legacy they leave behind. I was like, oh, I'm sold because I love those type of movies. Like, I'm so sold.
Yeah, I mean, I was explaining it to my girlfriend, like, what it was about. And I'm like, yeah, it's about this guy, you know, he decides to, you know, take up a life of crime because he wants to, you know, support his kid or whatever. And there's another guy, and she's like, oh, let me guess, it's a cop, you know? So it is, like, typical, but it seems like it's done his own struggles
going on, because there's some kind of corruption involved that he doesn't want to be a part of or something. I don't know.
And, you know, Bradley Cooper, he's on the rise, baby.
Yeah, he's doing,
and I'm really happy
doing
about
good
that.
Stuff, yeah.
So that's my number one. And which is awesome, because it's coming out soon, right?
Yeah, March 29th.
There we go. It's going to be a good, like, March.
It is going to be a good March. I agree. Yeah,
it's going to be a solid
We're going to be going to movies every week.
Yeah.
My number one, obviously, since Jason mentioned it earlier, and you haven't heard it yet, Only God Forgives.
Yeah.
I love Nicholas Winding Refn. I think he's the next Stanley Kubrick. I really do. For a while, I thought it was Paul Thomas.
Really, you're like, I really do.
I really do, guys. I'm really serious. No, I mean, him and Paul Thomas Anderson are both in that same boat, but. I am excited for it. We talked about it already, so there's nothing much else to say. I just fucking hope it gets a release date for this year. I'm going to sound really stupid. So, yeah, that's it.
Cool.
All right. My number one is a movie that's coming out this weekend. Mama. I just love horror movies.
I should shoot you in the head right now.
Whoa. No,
if I had a gun.
Rudy, you're out of the podcast.
Awesome. I wish
you. Well, I'm glad you're excited about next week's episode, then. That's good.
I'm excited.
It'll be your episode next week, then, right? It'll be all about Mama, so he'll be
your partner. Well, I didn't know about the movie until Jason showed me that short, and that short was fucking great, even though I hate how it ended.
It ended terribly, yeah. And did you know that the guy who directed the short directed the movie?
All right, hopefully he changed that ending.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't like the trailer's annoying with the whole like mama, like it's fucking annoying.
It is annoying.
But like seeing like the different TV spots, it looks scary. It looks like it's gonna be really scary. And I've been reading like early reviews, and they're saying it looks pretty good.
I would look for a good horror movie. I didn't realize it was Jessica Chastain in the mom role.
Yeah,
or stepmother role, or whatever.
No, they're just like adopting them. I don't. That's
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, foster, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that was her. She looks really different from outside her.
Yeah, she looks like emo.
Yeah.
Emo Jessica Chastain. And do you guys watch Game of Thrones?
I do watch it. Yes.
That's the guy from it.
Oh yeah, yeah. He plays.
He's like He's like the Kingslayer or whatever.
Oh, what the hell's his name? The family name. I don't remember anymore.
Oh, the Lannisters.
Lannisters. Yeah, he plays the one of the Lannisters.
Yeah.
Wasn't he in a Norwegian movie too called Headhunters or something?
I'm not sure. I don't think I saw it.
And I heard that was pretty good too. I don't know. Okay, sorry. What were you saying, Rudy?
No, Mama, number one. Oh, because I think it's number one because like it's this weekend, so like fuck it.
Yeah.
It's so close.
Yeah, ours are all like fucking a year, like now 6 months away.
You guys have any I'll start with my honorable mentions. Man of Steel was my number 10 until I saw that Oblivion trailer. I probably should have watched the Man of Steel trailer again, then I probably would have changed my mind.
Yeah, you would have. It's Superman, okay.
I have Gravity on here, Alfonso Cuarón, and then a movie called Horns.
Oh, yeah. You know what I said? I heard about that.
It's, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but it's based on a best-selling novel, and it stars Daniel Radcliffe, you know, Harry Potter, as this guy whose, like, girlfriend gets, like, I think, like, raped and killed. And, like, he's, like, the prime suspect, I guess. And after, like, a night of, like, drinking, he wakes up hungover and he has horns coming out of his head, and like it gives him the power to like kind of force people to tell the truth, or like people to like give in to like their darkest desires, and he's kind of using that to find out what happened to her. And Alexandre Aja, the guy who did High Tension and Hills Have Eyes, and I always forget that he's done this movie, but he did Piranha. He did Piranha. I like always forget, like, oh, I know he did more than just those two. He's a great horror director, and it looks like a cool idea. So, sweet. Those are my honorable mentions.
Thank you, Jay.
Cool. My honorable mentions is Pacific Rim, This Is the End, Lords of Salem, Great Gatsby, Oblivion, Evil Dead, Kick-Ass 2. Cool.
My honorable mentions is everything you guys read. Like, I'm just here like, oh,
yeah, God, pretty much, but I didn't say my list, and you guys put on your list, that's my honorable mention.
Gravity, you saw me on that. The Lords of Salem, that's exciting. Elysium, Place Behind, Behind, whatever. Only God Forgives and Horns. Yeah. Good job, guys. Thank you.
Good job for giving me information.
All right, well, we'll get into what we watched.
That's right.
What did you guys watch this week? Did you watch anything this week, Rudy?
I sure did, but we'll start off with this one.
Why start with me?
Because I started one, Jason started one, now you start one.
Oh, okay. I watched, I'm trying to remember how many movies I saw. I saw a few movies this week.
Yeah.
I saw Lincoln for the second time, which was kind of unfortunate. I saw Take This Waltz finally, because you know the way you were talking about it, I said fuck it, I gotta suck it up and watch it, and even if the woman's a bitch to her husband in the movie. And then I saw Euro Dreams of Sushi, the documentary.
Yeah, both of you guys were talking about that.
Take This Waltz was amazing. I finally got what you were talking about, the meaning behind the film. And I think the scene that I love the most in that movie was when Sarah Silverman, she comes, like, you know, her character plays an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And she, like, you know, takes her to the side. She's drunk. And she says, you know, like, she says, you're more fucked up than I am. There's always going to be a hole in life. You know, you can't just go anywhere, like, just trying to fill it.
Yeah.
And I love that line because, you know, I loved it. It described Michelle, what the hell is her name?
I don't know her name.
Her character, the girl's character, to a T. Like, she is a damaged person, and she just, you know, there's a hole in your life no matter what. You just, you know, you don't go around being selfish and trying to find it with somebody new or something.
Yeah.
And I love that montage, that whole scene where they go around the room and it changes and you see the relationship change.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And what a bitch. And had like a threesome with that. Like, what the hell? You're just married to a guy and now you're being a total slut. I don't know. I get so mad.
I didn't see it that way. Even though, like, stuff like that bugs me, I guess because I'm repressed in a way.
No, yeah, no, but I mean, like, still, it was still a great film.
Well, I'm not repressed, but I guess in a way I'm a prude. Like when it comes to that kind of stuff. I mean, there's nothing wrong with someone exploring, like, life sexually.
Yeah, okay. You know? No, but I love the...
But, you know, it did the relationship did it ultimately end ended up being how the other one was, where there was,
she wasn't happy. Yeah.
You know, that was going to be with her no matter what.
And there's a great line in the movie too, with the old lady, and I were like, oh my god, this is the meaning behind the movie too, where she goes, you know, new things become old.
Yeah,
it's just that this girl is just like likes the thrill of a new relationship, and then in the end, there's still that void there inside of her, and that ending. I don't know. I'm just gonna spoil it. I'm sorry, unless you don't want me to, because this is your podcast.
It's our podcast.
I mean, you start. No, you want me to spoil it?
If you want to.
Spoiler alert, guys. Spoiler. Just skip the next 30 seconds if you don't want to spoil it. But that that ending where she's on the ride, like, I think she finally realized, okay, I need to be okay being on my own sometimes, and that I'm sad on my own, and that's okay. And I finally, that's what I loved about it, where she gets on that ride by herself, and it's like, I'm going to try to be happy for a little by myself, at least for a little bit. And that's what I really liked about the ending. Like, she's learning, you know?
Yeah. And then, like I tell you, she never actually cheats.
No, okay. No, she doesn't cheat, but I mean, still, like, oh, like, I just hate, like, these indie movies where, like, now it's, like, these girls that, like, become, like, jerks to, like, their boyfriends, and, you know, like, oh, yeah, it's just, I don't know. Okay. And it's always because they're indecisive or whatever, and whatever. It just gets me mad. Okay. I'm not speaking on personal history.
Okay, and then if you want to get into, oh, I guess we could both get into.
Oh yeah, the next one is Yuyo Dreams of Sushi, and we both watched that, right?
Yeah,
it was just I don't know. It was a fun documentary. I mean, there's not. It was what it was. It was good and refreshing to watch, and I don't know. You want to get into it more?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we could get, like, I guess what it's about.
Yeah.
Legendary sushi chef.
Right? Yeah, legendary sushi chef, and he's like 85 years old. And to him, a life is about finding what you're good at, and then working every day to master your craft or whatever, you know. Which is something to look up to, even though it's kind of sad in a way too, because you know you're not really enjoying life too much.
He seems so happy.
Yeah, he did still seem like a happy guy. So it's kind of about that, but then it's also about his sons. One of his sons had actually left his restaurant and opened up his own place. And then the older son, who's expected to kind of take his place. So it's kind of like about that. And, well, you know, it's about the restaurant itself, which is this legendary sushi place.
It's a small sushi place.
Small place. It has like 10 seats.
Wow.
And it costs like $300 a person. You have to reserve like a month in advance in order to get in, and it has 3 Michelin stars. I guess that's a big deal for restaurants, especially for the type of restaurant it is. It's a really small one, but just the food is so amazing that it was able to get that.
Yeah, when you mentioned $300 sushi for Saturday, Chinese like, what the fuck? This guy's out of his mind. I guess him and Robert are going
up. Yeah, but I mean, it was a pretty cool movie.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah.
I like the, I like that there was this kind of fear from people, like, you know, well, what's going to happen once he dies, you know, it's just going to feel to his own. I don't think they, like, even there were doubts, you know, but 90% of the 95, even they said in the movie, 95% of the time, I don't even do anything. He says like, you know, it's all them. It's my son. And
I liked her in the film, how, like, you know, they're like saying that, but then you realize the son has kind of, in a way, already taken over.
Yeah, that's
he's already doing most of the kind of work.
Revealed, like, you know, like, especially when they got the Michelin stars.
Yeah.
The person who served the critic was his son who made the food.
Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah. So I don't know. It was a cooler movie.
Yeah,
about,
it was
all that
it
kind
was
of stuff.
Just very enjoyable. Like, you find yourself smiling and just, you know, like taking it. It's like taking it in. And
it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
And like towards the end, like, they only touch on it a little bit. Like, they kind of touch on the whole, like, overfishing and what it's done to the resources and stuff. Which, to me, I thought that was half-hearted. Like, that. I mean, maybe it wasn't. That was just me being cynical about it. But I just feel like the only reason they're complaining about it is because fish is harder to find. You know? Like, that's the only reason why they're against overfishing, is because they can't get the fish they want on a day-to-day basis.
Well, yeah, that's why they're...
You know, those Japanese people don't give a shit about fish. I'm just playing.
But yeah.
Have you seen anything else?
No. Did I? No.
Rudy, you want to go?
I've seen... the only thing I've been catching after work is Futurama. Like, there's been a lot of new episodes, I guess. Oh, yeah, definitely has been. Whole season, actually. I don't know if they got canceled twice. And now they're back on Comedy Central.
Did they get canceled twice? I don't know. I don't watch Futurama.
From Fox or something. I don't know.
I have no idea.
But anyways, I watched a couple of really good episodes. I had to share them with a few people. But like, I just love they both episodes featured back to back, and they're about the same theme about life and death. The first one was Bender. He was so proud that he was a robot and that he lives forever because he'll just basically download into a new body every time. Yeah. So he's making fun of like Fry, you know, like they have to die as mortals. It's like I love the line where it's like anything less than immortality is just a waste of time. But then he finds out that his backup system is malfunctioning, so he won't be able to download, when he dies. So he starts worrying about his death, and he's going through. He goes on his journey to find the person that expected him when he was born. That proved that he was a perfect robot. It's like, this person lies. It's like I want to find out why they lied. It was just, it's Futurama. It's funny, but like it also had this kind of mature theme. So it was just awesome. Bender's just a kick-ass character anyway. His in-your-face interface. But so the episode after that was it's called the Late Philip Fry, and like he's going out with Leela, and he's always late for their dates, all the important dates, and. And she's getting pissed off. It's like, oh, okay, I promise that we're gonna have a great dinner and everything's gonna be okay. And the professor has them try a forward going machine. Mm-hmm. It can only go forward in time. It can't go back. So they're supposed to go only 1 minute into the future, but they end up going 1,000 years into the future and they can't get back. So they keep on going forward into the future until they find a time machine or some way to go back. like all this funny crap happens, and I love the back and forth between the progression of Leela. After that night where Fry never showed up, she thought that he went to this pervert party, and then there's a nuclear meltdown at this party, and he supposedly died in it. So it was her evolution, then Fry and everybody else trying to find a way back. And I just love how they ended it, where it's like, you guys just have to watch it. It's awesome. It's an awesome thing about, just like both shows, it was about life and death, and just like, whatever.
I don't really watch Futurama.
It was hilarious. Jay?
Sure.
No, go ahead. Sure. I'll watch it.
Eventually.
Oh, no, I won't, actually.
I'll watch it for you, Rudy.
All right, I went on a documentary craze this week, big time. First one I saw, I rewatched Indie Game, the movie. Cynthia wanted to watch it, so we watched that, and I just really enjoy that movie. It follows pretty much three different games. It follows Braid, which has already came out and was successful, and it kind of talks about the guy who's gotten success from that. And that's probably the least interesting story of the bunch, even though I adore Braid. It's one of my favorite games ever made.
Least interesting because like you already know, like it's famous.
Yeah, but even the guy behind it he's not that interesting. But it is kind of cool how they get into how after the game came out, he was kind of addicted. To being online and seeing what people were saying about his movies and kind of missing the point of what his game was about and him like kind of ruining his image because he felt the need to comment on all the stuff that was written about the game. So, I mean, that was interesting. The other two stories are just really awesome. You have the people who made Super Meat Boy. So it kind of follows the development and them the game eventually being released, which is really awesome just to see them create this game. And then once it finally comes out and it's being really successful. So that was really awesome. You kind of feel really good for them. And then it follows, another game called Fez, which has finally came out. But it follows the guy and he's just ridiculously interesting. His name's Phil Fish. And
it's interesting because he's so like, a perfectionist was like, it was fallbacks too because like he lost a partner, then
Yeah.
So death in the family. So, like, this project just got pushed back so long.
Yeah, it's kind of about how something comes out and people are excited about it, and then having to live up to those expectations and how much pressure that is.
It happens a lot right now in video games, especially with big name studios.
Well, no, big name studios are closing. I mean, these are like, these kind of games are what's kind of taken over, but it's crazy because these games are made by a handful of people. Yeah. So whether or not they succeed or fail is a huge deal for them. The movie's just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, what definitely worked for me was watching those two different group of guys who are like underdogs, or like, you know, trying to hope, like, they're investing everything they have in this video game, and hopefully, you know, it makes it big. And I love how the documentary follows them. It's like, you don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
It could be good, it could be bad, no matter, you know, how much, you know, you're rooting for them.
Yeah.
Just, I guess, watching all those comments, you know, you said the first guy, the guy of Braid, you know, like how he became obsessed with reading people's reviews or comments or whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, you definitely have to, like, not get into, like, what people say, because then you're just gonna...
Yeah, but in this day and age, that's so hard. Like, imagine if you created something. I mean, for me, if I create something, I'm going to want to know what people think about it. Yeah. And, you know, the internet could be such a negative place, and I just love how the movie talks about that. And, like, these guys are really, really going to be affected if they come out with something and it flops. Luckily, Super Meat Boy didn't flop, and neither did Fez. Fez came out, and Fez is supposed to be amazing. But, I mean, imagine if it doesn't, like, how hurtful that must be.
I know you played Braid.
I'm dying to play Fez and Super Meat Boy, but they're not on PlayStation, so I can't play them. But supposedly this year Fez is going multi-platform, so I'm sure it's eventually going to pop up on PS3. Awesome. But Super Meat Boy, I don't know. I'll play it when next Xbox comes out. So
have you played Braid?
I don't play any online games anymore.
Yeah, these are the games I like, so it was cool to see a movie about it.
Cool. I gotta watch it. It's on my queue.
And then I saw another game-related documentary called Chasing Ghosts, which is features the same people that were in King of Kong, kind of. It's about Walter Day, the guy who created Twin Galaxies, which is this really popular arcade in Minneapolis, maybe. I could be completely wrong with that. But it just covers him, you know, getting into scorekeeping, you know, where he decided, he just took it upon himself to say, hey, I'm going to keep track of the high scores for all these arcades. So it's about the arcade boom, and it's about all the different personalities that existed around that time who were, like, incredible at these games. But the movie, it's like, it's not like King of Kong, where you had this really awesome narrative of, you know, David versus Goliath. You want to see this guy succeed, he's such a nice guy, and the guy he's trying to beat is such a fucking douchebag. And, you know, that douchebag is in this movie, Billy Mitchell, as well, because he's good friends with Walter Day. So it's about those personalities, and those personalities are interesting, but there's no narrative that, like, drives the movie, so, like, you're not invested in it. So by the time it's, you know, reaching the end of the movie, you kind of want it to be over, because it's just saying the same kind of things over and over again, but whatever. It was slightly enjoyable. Sorry, guys. Two more. And then I saw The Great Happiness Space, Tale of an Osaka Love Thief. And this was about a subculture in Japan called host clubs. And these host clubs are basically clubs that women could go to in Japan, and they pay a guy to kind of entertain them, talk to them. It's kind of like being in a club setting in a way, but having somebody like a companion with you just to make sure you have a good time. So it's about that. It kind of follows this main guy who's the owner of, like, one of the biggest clubs in Japan. And then it kind of goes, they also interview the people under him, his employees and stuff like that. But this guy's like a master at it. They interview the girls who frequent the club, you know, who go there a lot, and, you know, they're, like, preaching their undying love to this guy, you know, how they want to marry him and be in a relationship with him. So it's kind of sad in a way, because you're seeing these guys who what they're doing is not genuine. You know, they're just.
Or is it?
Well, I mean, no. They talk to the guys, and you know, like I guess the industry, like 1 in 100 people who do this, they don't last more than a year because it's so hard. You know, I mean, imagine how hard it would be to. Your job is to make someone feel loved, but you don't actually love them. You know, but then it's interesting because it goes more places when you find out that the girls who frequent the club 70 to 80% of them are actually prostitutes. And it's kind of like they go to these clubs, and to feed that need to go to these clubs, they're willing to sell their bodies for sex, which is completely legal in Japan. So it's just really interesting, really fascinating part of Japan. To me, it kind of shed a negative light on Japan. Like, oh, I don't want to go there anymore. Like, it's kind of like horrible. But it makes for an interesting documentary.
You mean
obviously.
Japan having a creepy secret sex thing going on? Really? I didn't know.
It's called it's on Netflix. It's called The Great Happiness Space. It's interesting. Like from a filmmaking aspect, it's not really done that well, but the material itself is so interesting. Like it's enough for a watch. So, yeah. And then yesterday I went to the movies. You know, because obviously I made it a resolution to watch a lot more documentaries and foreign films, and I probably already watched more documentaries than I watched all year last year, because I've already watched like 6. But I saw a movie called Somewhere Between, which is about it kind of follows a group of different girls who were adopted from China, because you know China, I think it was in 1981, that's what my paper says anyway, could be wrong, but they adopted the one child policy, so if you had more than one kid they were put into a foster home and they were eventually adopted. You know, so the lady who made the film, she kind of made it for her daughter who's still young, which is kind of like, whatever. I mean, I'm sure it's full hearted for her, but to me, it seemed pretty half hearted. But, you know, it just follows these different girls, and some of them are interesting. Like there's one girl, and they're all like around 14 years old. So they're all kind of like reaching puberty. So you have the one girl, and her story is not very interesting, but she's very rebellious. You could tell she has like a strong attitude on her, but other than that she's not really interesting. And then there's the other girl who was like throughout her whole life she's like compensating for the fact that, you know, because these people were adopted, the people in the film anyway were adopted by white families, so they live like kind of in rural areas, I guess, so it's predominantly white where they're from, so obviously they're already going to feel kind of detached in a way because they're not white, obviously. So this girl who's always trying to compensate and trying to excel in school and like do all these things, compensate for the fact that she's not like everybody else. And she was interesting. And there's another one who's trying to be really helpful, you know, like going abroad. I mean, most of these girls in the movie, they do live privileged lifestyles, but still kind of has to be sad in a way not to have that connection with the people who gave birth to you. And the most interesting story there, because I guess in this situation, it wasn't like documented really well as far as the families that gave up their kids, and maybe even they could falsify like whether or not their kids were actually like, this is more than one kid or whatever, so it's not easy to find your parents, I guess.
Damn.
But you follow this one girl, and she goes to Japan, and she goes to a town, puts up these flyers, and this guy approaches her and says like, basically says that like, yeah, I'm your father, and they do a DNA test, and she has to go back home, and they eventually, whatever, you guys probably want to see, I don't know if you guys want to see the movie, I'll spoil it.
I wrote that.
But yeah, and you know, it ends up being true. So I mean, that's it's in a really, even though, you know, all the stories aren't interesting, there's like her story in particular is just really powerful. And once you get to those emotions where she meets her parents and stuff, like I was bawling. I was like, oh man, this is like, this is intense. This is pretty emotional. And for that, it's worth seeing. I mean, it's not that great of a movie, but it's cool material. So yeah, that's what I saw this week.
Cool.
Yeah.
Already.
Oh yeah, that was it, right? I'm sorry, you already talked about Futurama. I kind of threw it out of my head already. I'm sorry. Yeah. So you guys can contact us at thefilmclubpodcast@gmail.com. Our blog is filmclubpodcast.blogspot.com.
Should we mention our name?
This is going to be updated soon. We don't know how we are going to be going through a rebranding, through a name change. I guess since Robert came up with it. What's our new name, Robert?
What was it again? No, I'm just kidding. Our new name is going to be Citizen Cinema.
Yeah, so that's going to be the new name of the podcast. We just thought the film club was a little generic, and we're going to change it. You could send us a voicemail. Talk about anything you want. We'll air it on the show. You could call us at 773-245-3476. And then I also want to thank, I mentioned this to Robert earlier, there was a guy named Jim Laskowski. He founded the Directors Club podcast. And we kind of started around the same time. Obviously, we fell off for a bit, but they've been going strong for 2 years. So check them out. It's a really good podcast where they record bi-weekly. So they release 2 episodes a month. And each episode is obviously centered around a different director. But he was nice enough. He wrote a story about how much he loves movie podcasts, which are pretty awesome. And he was nice enough to mention us on there. That's one of the podcasts
We
should give a listen. So thanks, Jim. And thank Patrick as well. He's the other personality on that show. Appreciate that, guys. And our next episode, we're going to be reviewing Mama. And looks like The Last Stand, which is Kim Ji-won, the guy who did I Saw the Devil, Good, Bad, and Weird. We'll be reviewing those 2 movies. So yep. Stay tuned for that. Bye, guys.
Goodbye.
See ya. Take care.